Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast. I've met many people over the years who have failed and given up. The point of this podcast is to get people to understand that failure is part of the process.
Welcome back to the Fail Forward podcast. Today, I've got the awesome Andy Taylor. Welcome to the podcast, Andy.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
It's amazing. And this is our second attempt because we tried it on Monday. I'm not going to rant too much, but I hate Wi-Fi in this country. I don't know how they expect us to run this tech world when we haven't even got good Wi-Fi in our own homes. But anyway, great to have you here. Great to have you here for the second time. I was just joking with Andy because the hazard of my bald head is that when I've got the light on in this room, it's shiny. So if you're watching on YouTube, the reason why it's quite dark behind me is because if I had the light on, it would be a massive shine in your eyes. So you've got just got the light in my face and not above my head. So Andy, let's get into it. Tell me, you recently sold a seven-figure business, which was a fencing business. Just take me back to how you got started doing fencing and how that all came about.
Yeah, so I went self-employed maybe 15 plus years ago. Very standard story of wasn't enjoying the work I was doing, didn't like the boss I had. And my dad at the time was running a property maintenance company. So we were doing, he was doing in between tenant refurbs, kitchens, bathrooms, decorating, fencing, all that kind of stuff, and had too much work to do on his own. So he brought me in. And the only stipulation he had was, I don't want you to work for me. I want you to be part of the business. So literally from day one, he was like, it's 50% your business, but it's also 50% your responsibility. It's 50% of your work. And if you don't work, then there wouldn't be money at the end of the month to pay you. So you have to work just as hard as I do. And it was good, actually, because it gave me the opportunity, especially later on. So when we first started doing it, he was very much still, although we're 50-50 partners, he was very much still the boss. He was running things. He'd been running businesses for 30 years at that point. And also because of the age gap, everyone just assumed he was the boss. So you would go into meetings and they would talk to him as if he was a boss and I was like his son and member of staff. It didn't really bother me, to be honest. I was like, it doesn't matter to me because behind the scenes I am. I get paid the same. I'm responsible for the decisions we make and that kind of stuff. And then after we did that for about 5 years, the supplier that we were buying all our fencing materials and sheds from went up for sale. And we basically couldn't afford to buy that business at the time. But what I've realized now is we went into a JV partner agreement with a landlord that wanted the building, but didn't want the business. And the old owners wanted to sell the building and the business as one job lot and the business to continue. So their business premises was in a really good location and they'd had tons of offers, but nobody wanted the business. So we went into a JV agreement. We took on the business on a five-year lease, which we all agreed up front. And then we bought the business monthly. So it was basically like a no money down deal to buy the business, none of which I knew at the time. It was just like this, we don't have the money. He really wanted the building. They were like, look, if you allow us to just pay more on our rent every month, we can go in with you and you get the building you want. And that was the point at which my dad was starting to get towards retirement age. And he was like, wanting to step back and he started to cut his hours down. And then I started to take over the business and kind of going, cool, we've now got this business that's, it was really well established, but it was run down and the two old boys were way past retirement age and they were just kind of doing the bare minimum.
They're just getting by, which you see a lot. You see people get to that age and then they're just like, you know, they're just going through the wheels of motion. They've made a bit of money and it's now just like, what's next kind of thing.
Yeah, the building was paid for. It was small enough to be no business rates. They had one member of staff. The two of them were still fitting. Like the owner, like, is still fitting. The old owner is 10 years later is still fitting fences.
Like, can't ever leave it.
and he's like, he must be late 70s and he's still going. They were just like, the one owner wanted to sell, the other one didn't. And that was the kind of the only agreement they could come up with is, you know, to sell it and make sure the business continued. So, yeah, we took that business from one member of staff and we brought one member of staff with us. So it's like two members of staff and two of us running it to 13 members of staff. We moved to a bigger unit, leased all the company vehicles and that kind of stuff and was much bigger deal when we sold it. So
what was the most challenging thing about going from like one member of staff to growing it? Because I know the pains of growing businesses, but what did you, two questions, what was the bit that you enjoyed the most and which was the bit that you found the most challenging?
So The biggest thing for me is I love the self-development side of it all. So I realized quite soon on in that business, if I wanted to grow it, I had to find a way of learning what it takes to do that. And I had a really good friend at the time. I still got a good friend now, a really good friend. I just interviewed him on my podcast. And he basically just said, look, here's a couple of books you've got to read. Read these couple of books. Here's a couple of podcasts. Listen to these podcasts and just start taking stuff in. And he gave me this really great bit of advice right at the beginning. He said, look, read a book. And as long as you get one like good bit of value out of that that book, it was worth reading. You could get 10 or 20 different things out of the book, but as long as you get one thing, the book was worth reading. So don't stress about having to have like, you know, have everything that it takes to run your business in one book. And I think that was really great advice for me. And that's kind of what I look at books now. So if I get any more than one thing out of it, then it's a massive bonus for reading it. So yeah, that was the thing that I really enjoyed. Challenges is things like the systems and processes, because
yeah, feel that.
Yeah, you know what it takes to do this thing.
Yeah.
And but trying to get it in a process and system that somebody else can understand and do. And obviously now, you know, like compared to 10 years ago, it's much easier to create video content now. It's much easier to like screen record the things you do, and there's lots of systems and processes you can use for that. But when I was starting, it was like I had an iPhone, but it was more like an original iPhone, so it wasn't as good. So everything was not quite as easy to do. So yeah, the struggling point and having that ability to kind of let go of stuff.
Yes.
You like your ego takes over and it's like, well, I'm doing this job in a certain way. And that took me a lot of learning.
And yeah, ego has a big part to play in a lot of things, doesn't it? And I see it all the time. Your ego gets in the way of doing something maybe a bit more rational because you think I should be able to do this, and I'm the leader, I'm the boss, etc., etc., etc. And then also there's some letting go, isn't there, which is part of going up through the levels. It's actually letting go. Like we've just been mentoring and training some people this week, and half of it is they've got good businesses, but they're right in the middle of it, and their ego keeps them there, and there's some actual journeys of them moving away from them going, but I know everything, it's all in here. And like you say, with the systems and processing, it can be all in your head, but you've got to get it out onto paper and get, and also have the trust to let other people do some stuff, empower them and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So that was the first thing was, and also working with my dad wasn't always easy. And I've worked with a few different family members now, and I've run my current business with my wife. And there's, when you work with family, you have this amazing level of trust. There's always a baseline of trust, you know, like, and trust them like straight away. So that makes for the first part of a business, like business together, really great. But what it also means is like, how do you not take that stuff out of the business? How do you not conflict in the business and still remain family and friends after that? So, and at the time, my dad was in a completely different place. I was like, you know, we started that business, I was, you know, late 20s, he was, you know, coming up to retirement, and he's like, I don't need this, I don't want this, I want to do a few days a week. And at times could be quite, it's the right word, just kind of like not interested in the process that I put in place. But I think after a few years of the shit I was doing started working, yeah, the business improved, the profit margin got better, we started to employ more staff to do, you know, especially like things like the on-site stuff. You know, I got myself off the tools fairly quickly because I couldn't manage the workshop and the on-site and do all the quotes and do on-site. So we managed to bring in a member of staff fairly quickly and like set up our first team of two guys to full-time fit. And that was quite a big thing. And then with that, obviously then the revenue improves and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's managing all those type of things really.
Yeah. And it is challenging working with family and friends. Like I've had friends that work for me, and you get that, like you say, you're right, you get that element of trust, which is great, because then you can go, cool, I can trust them to go and do stuff. But then over time, whenever there's an issue, you've got a big barrier of emotion that's in the way. So if you have to have a difficult conversation with someone, it makes it so much more difficult, right?
Yeah. And I think as well for me, I don't think so I did a post recently on my socials about, you know, three reasons to pick a business partner and why you should do that and things to think about beforehand. And I think a lot of people go into it, go, cool, I need a business partner because I can't do this on my own. And I don't think they realize that maybe if you've got a certain skill set, you possibly can, and you could employ somebody to help you. And or making sure that the business partner you bring into the business is the opposite of what you are. You know, if you're extroverted, outgoing, sales focused kind of person, and your business partner is numbers, spreadsheets, systems, process focused, then the two of you kind of bolt really nicely together. And then there's probably only going to be a few little bits in the business that you can't cover, and then you bring that into a member of staff. But I've done it a few times before and not really thought about that, and you kind of fit in some roles. It just kind of happens, but it's just by chance. It's not like you're good at this, you do that, I'm good at this, we do that, and then it works.
Yeah, I totally get that, because I've done business all myself for the last 16 years, apart from a year ago, where I've now got two business partners, one in the property side and one in the mastermind side, and they're opposite to me. If I had the same as me, because I'm just like ideas, vision, get shit done, like out there, that sales stuff. If I had another one of me, like the business would just be chaos. It would be absolute chaos. So I completely hear you on that. Finding a JV partner that complements your personality is key, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just, it's something you don't think about. And I think also having a think about what you want from the business. And I think it's difficult, because I've always found long-term planning difficult. But I also knew that I wanted to grow a business that ran without me and that I didn't have to really work in. So although I didn't have a very specific, like, this is the 10-year goal, this is what we want to achieve, this is what we want to do, I had an idea in mind that I wanted to earn a certain amount of money and I wanted to not have to work very much for it and to have the business running without me. And that kind of created the decisions I make. And when that came to a business partner, the last business partner I had wasn't that way minded. So his idea was, well, I'm just going to turn up each day, I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to go home. And as a business partner, that could create frictions between us, because I was more like, well, what are we going to do to not be here? And he was like, yeah, but I'm just going to show up and do my thing. And you're like, but I don't want to be here. I want to grow it so I don't have to be here. And so it became like, and that was where we never had. So obviously halfway through the fencing company, my dad did retire. And then I brought in my brother-in-law again, no like trust. But we never had like serious discussions about where we want to take business, how do we want to grow it, how do we want to operate in that business, do our skill sets complement each other. And we realized kind of halfway down that road that actually we both wanted completely different things out of our working career. I'm an entrepreneur, my mind works like that. I'm always thinking like you about new ideas and about how we're going to grow this thing and what can I do to grow it, and then kind of step aside. And he was much more like, well, I just want more than a job, but I don't want to be an entrepreneur.
Basically, you just want a job with a bit extra money, right?
yeah. But yeah. It's difficult, because we never had that conversation. He had the skills that I felt I didn't have at the time, and I felt, because I'd only ever worked for my dad, I needed a business partner, so I couldn't do it on my own. You know, looking back in hindsight, I could have done it on my own, but I just didn't believe in myself enough at the time. So yeah, like relationships within a business is one of the hardest things to get right, I think.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you believe in yourself now?
I'm getting there. I am getting there, yeah. So,
and what do you do to work on that?
So a lot of this is like self-talk. So I realized as recently as kind of beginning of last year that my self-talk was horrific. And I didn't know. It sounds really stupid. Like you're in your own head all the time. And it's something stupid, isn't it? Like you have tens of thousands of thoughts during the day all the time, and you're always in your own head. And I didn't realize how bad my self-talk was. And I was going through a bit of a difficult time, and I'd voiced some of the things that I was kind of talking in my head to a friend of mine. And he kind of recoiled and was like, ooh, that was a bit. And then when I'd said it to someone, I was like, oh, I could completely see that. Like, and I'd been going through this thing in my head for weeks before that and was completely adamant that thing was true. And I still think now, and I'll go, well, cool, I haven't got to where I want to get to. I'm still on this path. So I've not kind of achieved anything. Whereas actually, I did it literally a couple of weeks ago in a meeting, and they're like, whoa, whoa, take a second. Yes, you're working towards these things, but you have achieved all these other stuff, remember? Remember, you built this business, you sold this business, you've set up a property business, and we've set up a training business recently, and there's all this stuff going on. But yeah, I'm like probably my own worst enemy. Meditation, I think, has been like really good for me this year, trying to do that as regularly as possible, like most mornings when I wake up. And a lot of that is about, for me personally, is quiet in the mind. So even in meditation, I saw the biggest battle for me is getting out of my own head and just into the myself and stopping my brain going, my to-do list for today is this and that, and then I'm not met it at all. And then, but for me, it's that kind of work to bring myself back into this moment, and it's definitely helping me, and I definitely feel better when I go through that process. But it's hard as fuck. It's like so hard.
It's like exercising, isn't it? It's like getting it into your routine, and your mind sometimes resists it, and mine does with meditation, because I've tried it before and my mind's just going at a million miles an hour, and I'm like, oh god, I just this is difficult. So I feel that for sure.
Yeah, so I heard Sam Harris on a podcast recently, and I follow his meditation app, which is really good because you can kind of select the time and mess around with it stuff. He does a daily meditation every day, and he was talking on the podcast, and he was like talking about how he'd had a conversation with somebody, and they were talking about, I find meditation so hard. I can't get into the moment. My mind's all over the place. And he was like, that is the exact reason why you should meditate. How hard it is the reason you should do it. And I was like, okay, I get it now. It's like, it's not that meditation isn't for me. It's just hard for me. And I need to just keep working at it. And I need to keep doing it. And getting out of my own way, really. It's definitely helping.
It's tough, though, because I'm exactly the same. Like, literally, I'm constantly giving myself a hard time all the time. You know, we just had a course yesterday. We had 8 people on the course. Everybody, we had 100% sign up rate to our mastermind. Like, I'm absolutely buzzing, but I still then drive down the road and I'm like giving myself a hard time about stuff. And I'm like, what is that? Like, it's that, it's like ingrained into us sometimes to have these kind of negative thoughts. And I think the way I see it is like, people see other people all the time, and we live in this world as well on social media where everyone's living their best life, and everyone's going through their own trouble, but you don't see it. Like, I see someone driving a really nice car, and then I think, oh, they must be doing all right for themselves. But now I'm driving a nice car, but I'm not looking at myself going, I'm doing all right for myself. I'm just looking at what everyone else is doing. But no one really knows what's going on in our minds. And it's really tricky. And it is so important how we talk to ourselves and how we talk to other people. But like, one of the things we always say to Esme when she says she's stupid, we're like, would you talk to someone else like that? And she's like, no. I'm like, well, don't talk to yourself like it. So tell me, with your self-confidence, do you feel like that's growing through all the meditation you do and the practices that you do now on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of a weird one, isn't it? Because I was always, I just did a lot of this stuff is, as you start to learn this self-development stuff, you start to look inward, don't you? And then you start realizing things that have just been, that you just presume is part of you. This kind of negative on myself thing has been there for such a long time. You know, And I look back now as a kid and as a teenager, I was the most confident person that you could be. Like, I was really confident myself. I was like a really good athlete as a kid and as a teenager, and I did really well in that part. I did all right with school, and then I became an adult, and then all this other stuff sort of came on. And then I realized, after being an adult for 20 years, that I didn't really know who I was. And I think a lot of this stuff is kind of figuring out who I am. And I've spent probably the last maybe 2 or 3 years kind of figuring out who the fuck I am. Like, I just don't know. I just didn't know. I was like, I thought I should be this for certain people, and I should behave in this sort of certain way, and I should dress in a certain way. And I became very kind of aware of what I thought everyone else wanted. And then when you have conversations with people, they're like, no, not really. Like, just be you. And you're like, that's not what's in my head. And I think, yeah, the meditation is part of it. So a lot of the catalyst to a lot of this stuff was, I built this business and got to a point where, right in the middle of COVID, the business, the fencing company, was doing the best it'd ever done. We'd taken on a new premises. We'd bought in probably like 4 or 5 more members of staff at that point. You know, revenue was like going up like crazy at the time. And I felt my worst. So I'm sure all the lockdowns and all this stuff didn't help. But I dealt with depression for the first time in my life at that point. And again, it kind of creeps on you because you don't realize. And I think a lot of that's like the self-talk, and you start just having these terrible conversations with yourself. I hate everything I'm doing. I don't deserve this life. I don't deserve what I get. And again, this is all self-talk where you're just like, none of this is right. Like, I don't feel good. I don't feel like I want to be here. And I got to a point, and I remember the occasion really well. We're in a park as a family. We're out for the day. It's a beautiful day, and I just didn't want to be there, like, at all. I didn't want to be in the space. And my amazing wife walked over, and she must have known something wasn't right. She must have read straight through me. I'd been hiding all of this from. I'd not said anything, you know, standard kind of masculine way of just dealing with everything badly ourselves. And she just asked me, like, what's wrong? And in that moment, I was just like, I'm depressed. I'm so depressed. And that'd been the first time I'd ever spoke to anyone about it. And yeah, that was probably like 3 years ago. And that was the catalyst to making a lot of changes. We decided, you know, a year later, not long later, we started to go into property. You know, I put the business up for sale and we sold that last year. And a lot of that was all from that one moment where I was just like, none of this works. My self-talk is terrible. And started to work on me. And like you say, meditation is really important. I exercise religiously every day, you know, whether it's a run or whether it's in the gym or if it's a few minutes anywhere, like I would do some kind of exercise every day, because I realize now it's keeping me in a good place mentally to go, cool, I can cope with whatever the day brings. So I've done my workout today before we jumped on this. And for me, it's like, if I've got time to do anything, I've got a gym in my garage at home. So I would just go down there and do a workout, because that's going to get my mind ready for whatever the day's got for me.
Yeah, I love that, because you've got to work on yourself like you'd work on your business. And that's one of the biggest things I've learned through the self-development world, is just, the, you know, they say success leaves clues, right? And you just see, you know, all the successful people who have this foundation of every day, who do the exercise, the meditation, they, you know, do crazy things like ice baths like I do now. And that's your foundation to be able to turn up to be the boss, the father, the leader, the trainer, the person, the mentor that you need to be. So we met, didn't we? We met through Service Accommodation Mastermind, where we first met. So you were just coming to the point of sort of coming out of this state of depression. So just tell me a little bit about how, you know, I know you said earlier, really, really poignant point is that men don't talk that well, and you've been holding it all in, and quite often you hold it all in and you've got stuff bouncing around in your head, and sometimes the first step is just to talk. So after that day in the park, what was your road to recovery?
So having conversations with people, so I presumed that nobody cared and that they had their own shit going on and nobody really cared. And the first thing that Rachel said to me, my wife, and she was like, just talk to your friends, like just fucking talk to them. And I was like, yeah, but they've got their own shit going on. Like, why do they want to listen? And I took a couple of mates out for a beer. We had a chat and I just told them how I felt. And every time I spoke to somebody, I felt better. And they didn't react how I thought they were going to react. They did care. And they were like, look, why didn't you reach out earlier? And I was like, because I just felt like I couldn't. And ever since then now, I am much better at voicing things when I don't feel right. And I've maybe got worse at hiding it as well. So I had an occasion probably a year ago, it would have been over a year ago, because I was still at the fencing company. So, and I come back from work and I had a really shitty day. And every time I come home, my wife would genuinely ask me, how are you? How was your day? And pre-depression, I would always say, irrelevant of how I felt, yeah, fine. Like there was no conversation further than that. And on that day after, I then had some conversation with friends and I'd been much more open about how I'd been feeling. She asked me, how was your day? And I was like, yeah, fine. And then I went, no, it's been really shitty. And this is why it's been really shitty. And I've just not having a good day. And that was quite a big day for me to go, actually, I have the power to control how I think. I've got the power to control when I talk to people, and I've got great people around me, and I can talk to them when I need to. And especially with my wife, I talk to her about stuff all the time now. So we run a business together, but also we're married and we've got kids together. So it's really important that we are able to communicate. And if I'm in a good state mentally, then I can turn up in every way she needs me to. So I can provide, I can be a good business partner, I can be a good dad, I can be a good husband, I can be good in all of those aspects. If I turn up each day and I'm honest about how I'm feeling, I'm honest about what's going on, and I do the things that I know help me feel better. And for me, exercise is one of the biggest things on that list. Like I am so much better when I've put myself through it. Maybe not straight afterwards, but later on that day, I'm definitely feeling better.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever regrets a workout. I think it's the thought beforehand that beats us up beforehand and we don't want to do it. But I don't think generally anyone ever regrets a workout. It always makes you feel good afterwards. So yeah, agree. So tell me, you're coming out of depression, you and Rach come and sit the service accommodation course and mastermind that we both were on. And at this point we met, and I remember when we met, you were like, I've got this fencing business, I'm getting into property. I want to sell my fencing business. Now I'm trying to sell it. I've got a few tricky things to navigate. I think with your brother-in-law and trying to get it sold. So tell me about selling your business. How was that process? And is there anything you do differently next time?
I would get help at the beginning would be the best bit of advice anyone could give me at the time. Go and find something that's going to help you through that process.
Yeah. Well, like a mentor or a coach or someone that's done.
Yeah, exactly that. So I'd worked with a few business coaches pre-property, and then I went to, like you did, I did the progressive stuff, and suddenly started realizing that everyone you spoke to was like, yeah, I've got a business coach, I've got a mentor, and I'm working with this person, I'm doing this training course, and I'm doing this, and it's like, whoa, this is weird. I spent years, maybe on and off, working with two different business coaches over a 7 or 8 year period, not consistently, one for a few months here and one for a few months there, like, not consistently at all. So the biggest advice I give to anyone selling a business is like, get some support. So this is a really good way of just dropping in that I have a training business that helps people sell in their business. It was the most stressful thing I've ever done. During the last bit of the process, we went through a lot of stuff, which when you talk to people that have sold their business go through as well. And I just thought it was all me, like that I had a particularly difficult sale. I had a cash flow issue within the business, which again was because I'd taken my foot completely off the gas within the business. They dropped the price on the date we were supposed to complete. And then I've had issues with a new buyer afterwards, legal stuff, where he's just been a pain in the ass. And again, if I'd known better, I would have told him on day one to just get lost, and the contract's a contract and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I just had no idea what to expect. I had no idea what the process was before sale, during sale, or after sale, and it was so over. I think like literally on the day we were supposed to complete, I nearly had a breakdown. I was, Rach will tell you that I literally just looked like a ghost, and I thought the whole thing was, stress, totally stress. I was so desperate to get out and move on that I just wasn't making sound business decisions in the day-to-day running of the business and with the sale of the business. So ultimately we sold the business for less than it was worth. I'll sell the business, and any issues that I feel I've got, it's all about the business. It's nothing to do with me or anything else. The business's fault. I'll sell the business. And then the next day I'm going to, just skip off into the sunset and live this amazing life. It didn't happen. I spent probably 2 months in denial about the whole thing. I never once really celebrated it or felt happy about it. It took me months to get over it. Like, honestly, I just was like, because I hadn't really set a plan of what I was doing next. It was all just like, it just wasn't, I just felt nothing. And that's the best.
So it's like you get the nuts and bolts of selling the business, and it's a psychological thing. It's like when my business went under, the actual transaction of the business going under was quite straightforward. What then I was left with for 3-4 months afterwards was all the emotion part of it. And yeah, I very much different scenario, but again, leaving a business, it's the emotional part that's tricky. So how did you cope with that? So coming from your depression, did that send you back into that place, or how did you cope through those months?
Looking back on it, I don't think I coped that well. I sold my business March 2023, so literally a year ago. And I spent most of last year doing a lot of things, but nothing kind of very productively. I was doing lots of stuff, but nothing, kind of getting nothing done. I think a lot of that was because I didn't really know what I was doing. I had no kind of real plan to what looks like next. I was already running the service accommodation Airbnb business before I sold the business. So I was just like, well, I'll just go full time and that'll be fine. But it just didn't kind of work out like that. And there was a lot of baggage. I was more attached to it than I realized. I built it. I did the work to build it. I had some great people that I worked with. And I think I felt a little bit guilty for some of those guys because, you know, a few of them I had working for me for a really long time. And it was all that, like you said, all that emotion in that. I didn't even consider any of it. And I came out the other side and I was like, I don't feel anything. I didn't feel happy. I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel elated. I didn't feel, I just literally felt nothing. And for probably 2 months, I couldn't explain how I felt about it other than I've left and I've got a small amount of money for it. Yeah. I don't know. It's difficult. I can't change what's happened, but I also, I think there's bits and pieces in there that I do regret. I don't like the regret thing, but ultimately I was responsible for running that business and the cash flow issue we had was my responsibility. Literally during the few months of the end of the sale, you know, we had to take personal money and put it in the business to pay some wages because we just hadn't been running the business well enough. I'd kind of checked out mentally. I was like, well, I've got this other business that I enjoy this other business. I'm going to do this other business. But I had, you know, 10, 30 members of staff, whatever it was towards the end, that were all needing me to perform as a director so that they would continue to have the work and their thing. And the fact that we had a cash flow issue was totally my fault. I wasn't keeping a good enough track of the numbers. I wasn't regularly having conversations with my bookkeeper, my accountant, and my business partner about it. You know, because towards the end, we were, both of us were so desperate to get out of the business. We were just like, well, let's just do what it takes and we'll just get out.
Yeah, let's just keep the lights on for as long as we can, till it goes. So, yeah.
But it's like the worst thing you can do during that process because you, like, the business still needs to be profitable. Like any business a business doesn't just stand still if you don't work on it. It atrophies like a muscle in your body. If you just stop doing something, your muscle doesn't just stay the same. It'll atrophy and it'll get worse. And a business is exactly the same. If you don't work on it, it doesn't just stay the same. It gets worse because the systems don't work and the process don't work and then more errors happen and then we start buying things at the wrong price and we start selling stuff at the wrong price and we start doing a poor job on site and things like that. And it's all because you're not keeping a track of all of the metrics and we're not working on all of that stuff. You know, the marketing, the sales, and then down to the systems and processes and the execution of the job at the bottom run, which is all the staff are responsible for, but you're the one that's making sure it's being done right. And I think, you know, ultimately, I made some really poor decisions during that time because I wasn't in a good place mentally. And I look back at it now and go, I could have made a lot of that process a lot simpler if I'd sought some support. I had a lot of mentors within property, which were helping me within that business, but I had nobody personally to help me with the situation.
Yeah, it's completely different, isn't it? Completely different selling a business. And I can relate to that because when I had my stroke in October, I had 3 months off work. And albeit in the three businesses, we've got a great teams and they ran themselves for 3 months. I still then came back to the beginning of this year, you know, lots of different challenges because there wasn't anyone leading it from the front who was probably, you know, really financially accountable for the businesses. So it was coming back in. So I can see how not having someone leading for a couple of months in whatever capacity, yes, you were there, but as you say, you weren't fully leading it forward. You just had to keep the lights on, that does have an effect in any business. It's energy. Energy creates energy. You know, where energy goes, it flows. So yeah, I completely get that. So you've sold the business. You're out of it now. So tell me, how long do you think it takes to prepare a company to sale? Like when you teach and train people, what's your, you know, what do you usually say? Because I know I've heard different lengths of time from different people.
Yeah, so that's very dependent on the unique business in itself. And I think it depends on, so business is so complicated. So like a lot of people say, look, selling a business is like selling a home. And I would say, yes, it is. If the home you were trying to sell was a 2-bed one day, the next day it's a 4-bed. The next day after that, it's low end. The next day after that, it's high spec. Then it moves down the road onto a bad street the next week. And then it moves onto a good street the next day because your business is constantly changing. And typically people run, so I had a medium sized business and, you know, medium to small business. It's not huge amounts of revenue, not huge amounts of staff, a couple of buildings that we leased, vehicles we leased. So, and it was pretty well systemized and running pretty much without me. So, yes, I wasn't doing as much, but the day-to-day operations kind of ran without me. I had a quotes manager who was doing all the on-site quotes. I had a workshop team manufacturing and building everything from sheds to gates to fence panels, all that sort of stuff. And then I had a team of six guys in three vehicles fitting, and they were fitting all their jobs. And then I had a quotes manager, and I had a guy that assisted him in booking all the work in. So day-to-day, I didn't do a lot, but I also then wasn't working on the bringing in the sales and all that kind of stuff. So it can take anywhere from like a year to 5 years to put your business in the right position to sell it. And the reason for that is typically most people run a business to have the business pay the least amount of tax and then show less profit for you as a business owner. But then when you're trying to sell it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's in the best position. And some people's businesses might turn over a really significant amount of money, but then not make a lot of profit, or they have a business where it's totally reliant on this one person who is the face of the company, the sales of the company. He's also the one that's managing all the staff and everything else.
Yeah. He is the business, right? He's the business. Operator. You take him out of it and there's no business. And I see that all the time.
That's the thing, is going, well, which one of those is your business? And if it's a combination of a lot of those things, then you've got to put some systems in process, and you've got to start by, you know, creating a process to take you out of that equation. You then need to start to put things together so you've got a pack of information that you can pass to the next, to the buyer, you know, how you, your whole sales process and your whole staff management process and how you bring in staff, and like the whole, everything that's in your head, like I talked about earlier, needs to be in a system and a process so you can pass it to the buyer. And then your accounts need to be set up in a way where it shows good profit over a prolonged period of time so that you can show that the business is making this amount of money. And obviously you can show within that, well, you know, for us, we had two company directors, both drawing a full-time director salary, but not working full-time. So you know, you could take two of us out and easily replace us with a manager at that time in our business. And that's kind of how it worked. So I think there isn't a set answer, I think, is.
But that's a good answer, because it actually brought out a lot of stuff, because you're right, like the amount of people that are owner operators and the way people run their businesses to save tax. I was getting trolled the other day by someone on one of the tree surgery websites, and they're trying to look up all my companies on Companies House, and they're trying to tell me that I'm not earning as much money as I am. Well, I'm like, my company's set up in a way that, you know, it's going to be tax efficient, like everybody is. We've got the tax curve wrong as it is, and that's another rant for another day in this country. But people are leaving this country because we're taxing people too much. So that's what a good accountant will do, is save us money on tax. So, you know, it's, I see it all the time, but people go, I just want out of my business. And then you're like, well, one, you've probably been running it really, really, you know, chunky for a while and not showing big profits, and you take you out of it, you're the black book, you've got all the relationships with all the clients, you know everything in your head, you're still, you know, you're still the center point, because then there's not a business anymore. And I've seen people go, oh, my business is probably worth XYZ, and I'm like, well, if you go on holiday for 2 weeks, what happens? Oh, well, yeah, usually it's chaos. And even that one question, you kind of know, don't you, that there's going to be challenges to untangle that business.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, working with a good business coach, because typically a standard business coach will say, look, if you set your business up to sell, then that will help you do the things it takes for you to either sell it or step away and it runs without you. And then the tax mitigation and all that kind of stuff, like, you can change the way and accept the fact you might pay more tax if you're going to go, cool, we're going to sell in 3 years. So during that period, I'm going to pay more tax because I want to make sure the profits look accurate as they are. Whereas obviously, you know, the ways we're trying to keep that tax lower. And then you, that's a way of working. You have to just work the system for the thing that you're trying to do. So, yeah, I think, you know, basically after I sold the business, I spent 2 months not being able to function. And I'd kind of shared this in another group that we were in together, the Speaker Academy. A friend of mine in the room was like, well, I sold my business a few years ago and it was a shit show. And I was like, you're literally like talking like it's me. Like, yeah. Literally, the whole thing was a shit
Same
show.
Same experience.
Yeah. We started having a few conversations. We're like, we should really put a course together to help people through this process. So that's basically what we've done over the last 6 months. We delivered our first course in January, helping business owners understand the process. And then we've booked some more courses in for April. It's a single day course. And yeah, it's really cool actually, because this actually feels more like a kind of stop to all of it, is if I can kind of take this bad experience, go, cool, I've been through it now. I understand what it's like. I've been through the process of building a business and growing it and selling it. And I can go, cool, this is what it's like. This is what happens. And this is my experience. And this is my three business partners' experience who have all sold businesses, but in slightly different ways. This is what it's like, because selling a business isn't like selling a home, where it's just like, this is the main way you do it. Like the traditional way is, you know, you go through the whole process, go through solicitors, you exchange, your complete's done. Obviously, we're a property and there is some other stuff going on. There is other ways, but that's the main way that people buy and sell property.
Yeah, that's a standard way of doing it. So yeah.
And then, but a business can be structured in 50 different ways, depending on what the seller and the buyer want. We were adamant that on day zero, we wanted to leave. We didn't want to stay. So that's how we structured our deal. And, but I know a friend of mine is going through a sale process now, and he's getting a big payout at the beginning, but then he stays on as a member of staff with bonuses for 4 years. If he continues to grow the business as he's done over the last 4 years, then he'll get a significant payout then, which is the price of the business that they're valuing now. So that's a completely different structure. And he's like, I'm quite happy to grind for 4 years through this process to get that big payout.
Yeah, because he's got an exit date. He goes,
because he's got an exit date. Yeah, but and also that number is significantly larger than the one that I received, and it's worth the 4 years for him. But yeah, it's like the way you structure it can vary so much. So yeah, this is like a great stopgap where you go, cool, I've been through this shit. It's been rubbish. I've not enjoyed any of it, but I've learned so much from it, and I've learned that I don't necessarily want to go through that process again for me, or not at the moment anyway, but I know what to expect now. I know how the process works. I know how the due diligence is going to go. I know how the contract might be structured and that kind of stuff. And I understand some of the wordings of how they value businesses and all that kind of stuff. Whereas before, I was just like, they talk about EBITDA. I'm like, what? What is that? I was just so naive. I was like, I want to sell it. Let's just sell it and we'll get it done in a couple of months. And it obviously took a lot longer than that. And
yeah, yeah, it does. And do you know what I love? You've taken one of your biggest challenges and turned it into something that where you can help other people. And I think that's such an amazing thing to do. It's like when I lost my business and it all went under, and now I help mentor tree surgery business owners. I've taken all of that pain, all of that rubbish, all of that shit, and gone, right, now how can I use this? I've learned so much. I learned more in that year than I did the previous 10 years of running a business. And I was naive at parts of it. And now I then help other people. And I love the fact that you've taken this challenge and you're now helping other people. And I always say on this podcast, because there's so many coaches out there, there's so many, like the self-development world's like the wild, wild west, really. And I always say, go and find somebody who has walked the path that you want to walk. And that is exactly what you're doing. People out there and listening to this podcast are going to be like, I want to sell my business, but I don't know how. I'm in that position. I'm in the middle of it. And so I'd say to anybody who's listening to the podcast, get hold of Andy Taylor, because you've walked it. You've experienced the highs and the lows. And what you're doing, I think, is absolutely brilliant. So if people did want to work with you, how do they go about doing that?
So easiest way is find me on Facebook. Full named on there. So it's Andrew Paul William Taylor, the nice little blue tick on Facebook. That's where I'm most active. Find me on there. My training business is Prime Knowledge. We run this for sale business course at the moment, which is just a single day course, and developing other courses in the background at the moment. So yeah, all of them about our experience within business, just helping people really, and hopefully taking some sort of shit that we've all experienced and making good of it. And then hopefully just being able to help people not have the experience that I had, especially, and some of my business partners as well. It's just like, you know, really being able to help people. But yeah, find me on Facebook. I'm fairly active. So yeah, come and check me out. Give me a little
love it. Whatever, we'll put some links in the bottom of this episode. So just finally, what are your views on failure? This is all about fail forward, this podcast. So what are your views on failure and how that goes in with the process of life and business?
Well, I wouldn't be stood here now having a conversation with you on your podcast if I hadn't have failed quite a few times, because the reason I'm here is because of the failures. I think, you know, I'm still working on the mental side of dealing with some of those, but I just keep going. And like, life is failure, I think. Like, it is what life is about. And I think we can go through with rose tinted glass on and go, yeah, you know, it's all great and everything's amazing. I think actually social media has a lot to do with that, doesn't it? We only see this kind of polished external self, And I do try to share a little bit more on my socials about the more difficult times, the things I've struggled with, because I feel like that's the bit that would have helped me if I was on the other side of it. At the end of the day, I grew a really successful business, getting loads of things right, getting a few things right. Getting loads of stuff wrong, getting a few things right, and growing a business. I sold a business, making a lot of mistakes, failing quite a few times, and then selling it. And then same with the property business, just learning from the mistakes we make on a daily, weekly basis. And every time you get something wrong, you go, cool, how do I fix this for next time? And that's kind of my thing as an entrepreneur, is go, cool, we got something wrong. How do we not do that again? And how do I systemize processes so it doesn't happen again? And that's kind of our role as entrepreneurs, I think, is you just got to embrace it. Have good self-talk. Like, have good self-talk. It's not about you. Like, honestly, I blame myself so often. It's not me. I think anybody out there, like, honestly, we can always be our own worst enemy. Just think about what you said. The thing you said to your daughter earlier in the podcast, going, would you say that to someone else? Is even great advice for adults. It's like, would you say that to someone else? If you wouldn't say it to someone else, don't say it to yourself. Like, but I have to check that quite often to go, oh, wait a minute, no.
I still do. I still have to take my own advice. My wife always goes to me, I think you better listen to your own podcast and take some of your own advice. But yeah, I absolutely love that. Failure is part of the process, isn't it? And that's the best way to embrace it. We are going to make mistakes. And I think we can be really hard on ourselves. But once we understand that failure is part of the process and that we're failing forward, and as you say, that is part of life, I think you're exactly right. With social media, everyone sees everyone living their best selves. They don't see all of the setbacks, the rejections, the sleepless nights, the, you know, early mornings, what they put into stuff, how they work on themselves. And it seems to be on social media, there's so many overnight successes just appear, but they don't see the last 5 years. Like someone said to me the other day, Alex Hormozy's just come out of nowhere, but yet he's been doing a podcast for 5 years. So, you know, he's an absolute beast, but people just see what they think an overnight success. So Andy Taylor, thank you so much for coming on to the Fail Forward podcast. It's been brilliant. What we'll do is we'll put some links to get hold of Andy. So if you want to follow Andy, you want to be interested in his courses, we can get just drop him a message and he can get you booked on. So thanks for being on Fail Forward, Andy.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today. I'm on a mission to get people to understand that failure is part of the process. So please share this far and wide, like and subscribe.